This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
She is a criminologist who conducts legal research for attorneys in their preparation for trial. And she's going to share some things with us. So, Teresa, welcome to the program.
Hi. Nice to be with you.
It's wonderful to have you on the program. You emailed me, about a week ago, and you had been looking at some facts and figures and you'd been looking at Wolfgang Halbig. Let's just get it right out there real quick. And, you sent me a 5-page document, that I would like to share with the audience with your permission, but I won't post it unless you give me your permission. You've never been on the radio before.
No.
This is new. Anyway, tell us a little bit about what a criminologist does, and then we can talk about Halbig and what you have discovered about him. Go ahead.
Well, from my perspective, I didn't tell you this in the email, but I've also worked for a sheriff's department in the Identification Bureau, where we did crime scene investigation, and also any person who was deceased without a coroner present, the body had to be identified and that sort of thing. So fingerprint analysis, crime scene photography, evidence collection, and that sort of thing. And then also, just how to conduct an investigation. And the way I came across Mr. Halbig in the first place, I was really quite by chance. I heard him on a program that I happened to listen to, and he mentioned that the FBI data or that the UCR data, the Uniform Crime Reporting data, which was another thing that I did at the Sheriff's Department, was not in the FBI website. And I didn't even know who he was or what was going on at the time, but I since that was something that I also did, I went there and checked it out, and of course it was right there, and then I thought, well, what is this guy all about? And, the more I found out, when I found out how he was going to conduct this so-called investigation, it really intrigued me to find out that the way he was going to go about it was to prove that there was mold in a school.
Right, and he also, he's made so many claims. One of the claims that he did make was that the school, and he filed a lawsuit stating that the school was closed from 2008 to 2012, when in fact it wasn't. And one of the people who have put out so much information about that particular situation, about proving that the school was not closed, is an individual who calls himself Shill Murray. And he has a website, and I've invited him on the program, but to protect himself, he doesn't want the death threats and all the things that come along with some of the people who have, and don't let me scare you, but some of the people who have been investigating and trying to tell the truth about Sandy Hook have had death threats. And anyway, he has a website, and he has provided so much material in the way bring his website up here. His website is crisisactorsguild.com, and he just put up an article on August 4th, And he talks about, well, the name of the article is Wiley Wolfgang Weasels His Way Out of Another One. And which he is really funny. He is just delightful. And apparently Wolfgang Halbig said that he would give anyone $1,000 if they could prove that the school was open. Let me see. Let's see. What did he say? Okay. Expert Wolfgang Halbig has for years offered up a number of cash rewards ranging from anywhere between $1,000 to $10,000 in exchange for very specific photographs from Sandy Hook Elementary School. And so Murray, I just call him Murray, has provided all kinds of photographs, and Halbig said, oh, no, no, that photo, and this was on Veterans Day, and Halbig said, oh, no, no, those photos are from Veterans Day of 2011, which he inadvertently tells the truth. He doesn't mean to, but he inadvertently tells the truth, because before he said, oh, the school was closed from 2008 to 2012, and then he says, oh, no, no, those photos are from 2011. And he did that when I interviewed him also. I asked him if he had called the Joseph Honan mortuary, and he said, oh, I don't remember. And I said, well, when I called them, they indicated that you had called them. And then he remembered, and he said, oh, yes, they took care of 11 of the bodies. You know, so.
Well, see, one thing that makes him so interesting is his ability to set things up to make you prove a negative. As I said in my email, when you're in the position of trying to prove that what he's saying is false, I gave you the analogy that if I told you that I dyed my hair blue in 1973, it would be nearly impossible for you to find someone who knew me all through 1973 and could tell you with great assurance that I had not dyed my hair blue. I would be in a position of having to prove that they did not make blue hair dye in 1973.
Right.
So he's a very skilled liar.
He is. He's very skilled. And he has been on so many radio programs in so-called alternative media, and he just monopolizes the conversation, and he wants to give you all of these, all of his occupation and what he's done and who, and he can't prove any of it. In fact, I mean, seriously, nobody ever heard of the guy until Sandy Hook. And he promotes himself as a nationally known school safety specialist. But
right.
Nobody ever heard of him. If he's nationally known, we would have heard of him.
Right. Exactly. Well, he, in my opinion, as I wrote to you, he is far from an expert in anything. And, you know, being a school safety expert is the least of his problems. Because, you know, I don't know if you want me to go into this at this
yeah.
point. But,
yeah, go ahead.
Just his tenure as a state trooper, according to his own resume, was from 1974 to 1975. And during an interview with you, he said that he was a homicide investigator.
Right.
Okay. Well, if you just look at the organization that he worked for, which is the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles, their mission has nothing whatsoever to do with homicide investigation, unless it is vehicular homicide, which would be unintentional but negligent. For example, you know, someone driving drunk or that sort of thing. And even to be in a position to do that, the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles requires you to be a trooper for 2 years before you can even apply for that position.
Wow.
So,
and he did not even make it through his probationary period. And
that's what I think, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. And he gives different dates. On one resume, he said 1974 to 75, And in an interview, he claims that he was from 1974 through 1977. So, you know, one thing, if you're going to be a liar, you have to have an incredibly good memory.
Right. Well, and also in that one, in that interview with you, he said that, I think you tried to take him to task on the 3-year thing, and he said, well, but if you're in Miami, 1 year is like 3 years.
Right. So I guess he has his own little way of measuring time. Now you also,
yes,
in your document, you talked, yes, about the Air Force. Now, he said that he was in the Air Force, and I mean, it's just sort of amazing how many things he said that he did.
Uh-huh.
So do you want to cover that? I wasn't able to get the information that you did, but you apparently talked to some people that had more information than I was able to get.
Okay, well then, you know, if you need anything else, I'll be happy to send it to you. But according to Air Force websites, only people who reach the rank of staff sergeant, minimum rank of staff sergeant, can be trainers in the Air Force.
Oh.
And it takes 5 years, according to the Air Force, to become a staff sergeant. Now that's average. But in 3 years, you know, I think it would be really, really highly unlikely. And then after you attain that rank of minimum staff sergeant, technical sergeant, or master sergeant, you have to go, if you're accepted, then you have to undergo the training for the discipline that you're going to teach, which can take anything from 1 to 6 years. I'm sorry, 6 months to a year. And, you know, so that would put him five and a half years in the Air Force to be able to be a trainer. But he said that he trained in combative measures and disaster preparedness, which kind of leads me back to the state trooper thing. You know, in another interview, he said that he quit being a trooper because he had been beaten up so many times, and yet the Air Force determined that it shot at and beaten up, that he was competent to teach people in combative measures.
Oh, yes, interesting. yes, that he was a combative measures instructor and
right,
a disaster preparedness instructor. Wow,
right.
And he was only in from 1967 to 1970.
Right, right.
I mean, that's exactly what he says.
Right.
Seriously.
And, you know, another thing that I wanted to mention is that from the websites of the Florida Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles Department, which a state trooper works for, it very clearly says that they don't deal with crime. They deal with traffic accidents.
Right.
They provide licenses for vehicles, licenses for individuals, and they enforce the traffic laws. And you know, in the case of vehicular homicide, they do investigate that at a certain rank.
Sure.
The Florida Department of Law Enforcement investigates crimes, so. You know, all this business of him being a homicide investigator,
yeah,
you know,
funny.
I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous on its face. I'm sure that they receive some kind of minimal training in that sort of thing, but he would hardly be an expert and would hardly be someone you would consider a homicide investigator. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, he's told some whoppers. There's another individual that has done a lot of work and has followed this and followed all the lawsuits and whatnot. And he said he was sworn. He's sworn to tell the truth. And he said in this deposition that he'd been in law enforcement for 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
that.
Just amazing how this rolls off of his tongue and how people send him money. I mean, he's raised over $100,000 and says, and what he has done with that is he's gone after people who have tried to tell the truth about him. he sued C.W. Wade and lost in California. And so he's just a very interesting person.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Sam Bankman, but he's the world's leading expert on malignant narcissism. And I'm certainly no expert in this, but I can read, and I think that Mr. Halbig fits many of the qualifications for someone to be a malignant narcissist. They go absolutely insane if anyone challenges them. Rather than just to respond as normal people would respond, if you challenge me, well, then I'll just show you that, you know, that you're incorrect. You know, he chooses to, well, I'm sure that you've heard his verbal abuse. I've heard some of his verbal abuse and that sort of thing. In fact, when I found out the stuff about what he said about being on the FBI, not being on the FBI list, uh-huh. I emailed him. I was foolish enough at that time when I knew nothing about him to think, well, the guy just made an honest mistake. I'll just email him and tell him where to find the information. And I mean, he went absolutely insane. And you know, I still have emails from him where he told me I needed mental help and, you know, all this sort of thing. I think that's kind of a fallback too, is he tells you that you're mentally ill if you don't agree with him. So.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. I have not, been in contact. Well, he has sent me some emails recently, and I mean, it seems like he's just going off the deep end, and I don't understand where he gets his credibility. And he is supposed to be, according to James Fetzer, he is supposed to be the lead investigator, the leader of the people who are denying that Sandy Hook occurred. He holds him up as the person who is the lead guy. And you also mentioned in your document that Halbig has made claims. In fact, his website, the old website, claims that he was featured on CBS Good Morning America, Dateline NBC, MSNBC. And honestly, I could not find any evidence at all that he was ever on any of these programs. I could not find any evidence whatsoever that had anything whatsoever to do with Columbine. And he told me on my radio program that they called him the day after, and I said, "Well, who they?" And first he said the Department of Justice, then it was the Department of Education, and I mean, he likes to avoid direct answers. He doesn't like to give direct answers. So he kind of, you know, beats around the bush a bit. And so, yeah, he said that he was called and that he worked on it and that he gave congressional testimony. There's nothing. There's no evidence that he ever gave any testimony about Columbine. The only thing that I could find on where he mentioned Columbine was an article in his local newspaper. That's the only thing that I heard. And I have talked to, you mentioned in your paper, you mentioned, let's see, the two gentlemen that I've talked to, Ken Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to him, and I mean, they don't have anything really good to say about the guy. And he was, he signed up to appear at their local, or the conference for school safety experts. He wanted to have a booth there and whatnot, and they would not allow him to even participate in their conference, and this was Curtis, what is his last name? Curtis. Oh, darn. Okay. We're going to a quick break. We'll be right back, and I'll... All righty, we are back, And our guest this last hour is Teresa. She is a criminologist who conducts legal research for attorneys in their preparation for trials. And she's done some investigation into Wolfgang Halbig and has emailed him. He also made the statement that he was part of the Strategic Air Command. I mean, this is so ridiculous, all these things that he says. Anyway, sandyhookanalysis.blogspot.com, which is C.W. Wade's website, and Halbig said that he was also a certified fire inspector and that he was also an insurance adjuster. I mean, this guy has had more occupations or claims that he's had more occupations. But anyway, he was not allowed to participate in the National School Safety Conference, which was held in Orlando, Florida, and the executive director of this organization, Kurt Lavarello, informed him that he was banned from being an exhibitor. And I talked to Kurt Lavarello back in early 2014, and they said, in early 2014, and I didn't mention Lavarello's name because I didn't really have his permission to do so. But since he has come out and said, made it public his disdain for Halbig, I felt like it was okay to say that, yeah, he referred to him then as a pariah.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. I would think he would be, kind of an embarrassment to them.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. They really want nothing to do with him. And they accept the official version of Sandy Hook. And anybody that looks at all of the records, I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of photos and hundreds of pages of investigative reports, and there's dash cams, there's children seen leaving the school from the back. I mean, there's so much photographic evidence. Now, you said that you also had some experience in investigating crime scenes.
Yes.
And they say that, the deniers say that the official should not have asked for photographs. But you have 20 kids in there. You have to identify them some way. You can't allow people to come in and corrupt the crime scene. And who would want to see their child in that kind of a situation? But anyway, tell us a little bit about your experience in investigating a crime scene.
As I told you, any time anyone died unattended by a physician, the body had to be identified. But in a crime scene, we fingerprinted things, took photographs, collected evidence, that sort of thing. One thing I do want to dispel before I forget about it, though, is Halbig has often said, don't bother to read the Sandy Hook report. It's a document dump because of its length. But
yes,
if you've noticed, on the official Columbine report is 12,000 pages long.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And if you look at other reports of school shootings, they are of comparable length and scope to the Sandy Hook report. It is not some unusually long document, especially when there have been hearings held by, a variety of government entities. That is so untrue that it wouldn't be that long, and that they're only doing that to confuse the issue.
And I think it's pretty well organized. I mean, if you go to the website, they have it organized so that you can see the photographs, you can see the video that they took. You can see day three. You can see, I mean, it is so well organized, I think.
And also another myth is that when a child dies, the parents will be...
Teresa, hang on just one moment. We have a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. We'll pick this up on the other side. Go ahead. All righty, welcome back. Our guest this last hour is Teresa. And, okay, you were talking about the children, and so go ahead.
Well, yeah, he always says that they never show photos of children to the parents to identify them or to see their child, that no parent would accept that. That is a common practice, because believe me, the last thing that a parent wants to see, they may not know that at the time, you have to talk to them, but the last thing that a parent wants to remember their child is to have them, you know, brutalized by someone or be in a horrible car accident or any kind of thing like that. That is routinely done, is to show pictures of the child, you know, where they just show the face or some other part of the child that's not mutilated, so that the parent doesn't have to that be the last thing that they remember about their child.
Exactly.
You know, that really kind of got me too. I couldn't believe that he said that.
Exactly.
Even a competent traffic cop, which is essentially what he was, would know that.
Right. And there was, within 24 hours, there was a video that it was a CNN video, and somebody, just took 27 seconds out of this, 20-minute, talk that Robbie Parker gave, and, it was 27 seconds, and then they put, they made insinuations about him, because he seemed to be laughing, and they said, oh, he's an actor getting ready to do his thing. And, they said, you know, a parent wouldn't laugh. Let me read you what it says in the chat room. Why would a father who just lost a child be laughing or smiling? Well, there was an incident, when a woman, she was in Texas, drowned 5 of her children in the bathtub, and her husband gave a press conference on his front lawn the very day that this happened, and he was smiling at times, crying at other times. I mean, we never know how people are going to react. And if you're talking about something good about your child that has passed away or been murdered or whatever, you might smile. So we cannot judge how others are going to react. Were you aware of that video?
Yes, I am aware of the video. And I do recognize the fact, I mean, I've been around when parents had to be notified of the death of their child or, you know, their husband or wife, whatever. I mean, in fact, that's why I did not stay in law enforcement per se, was because of the things you see. It really is devastating. Only a certain kind of person can deal with that for very long. But I have seen people react in bizarre fashions.
Exactly.
You know, to a death. So you can't really anticipate it. Now, I mean, I understand that is something that police look at, you know, how people react to something like that as far as culpability may be concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But people do react in odd ways to things like that.
Sure.
No doubt.
Right. And this person I was talking about, Andrea Yates, and her husband,
right,
Russell Yates, gave this, you know, this talk and a press conference on his front lawn the very day that she drowned those 5 children in their bathtub.
Right.
I
often wonder why the people who believe this stuff about Mr. Halbig, all these things that he tells, why it is, you know, their next answer is always that if you don't believe it, that you must be in on it. I mean, I'm surprised you haven't heard that yourself, that someone hasn't said, well, you're saying these things because you're in on it too. That's kind of a panacea for anything anybody might have to say negatively about his approach to all this and what he thinks, is just to say, well, you're in on it too.
Right. I think, well, I've written a book about Sandy Hook, and I came out with my feelings about Sandy Hook, but it was only after I had investigated it. For somebody to come out within 12 hours or 24 hours or even 6 weeks and try and say what happened is absolutely ridiculous. And so, you know, you really have to investigate something. You have to look at it. You have to look at all of the circumstances and everything. And that's what you have to do. But since I have come out and said that, I mean, I've had hate mail. I've had a lot of hate mail. And I've been called all kinds of names because they say, oh, you know, Deanna sold out. You know, she's this or she's that. But, you know, I'm sure you've also heard of his 16 questions, that he asked 16 questions. And they've all been answered. All the claims that he has made have been repeatedly refuted, and yet they keep making the same claims. And this is kind of a Marxist kind of a technique or a tactic. You just repeat, 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 repeat. It does not matter that something has been refuted. If you repeat something, people are going to believe it. And
well, as Adolf Hitler said, if you repeat a lie often enough, it will be believed.
Well, actually, he was talking about the Marxist when he said that, and that was taken out of context. But because if you read the chapter in his books, and there's like Mein Kampf has been published probably five times. And if you look at that particular chapter, it's Propaganda for War. He is talking about the socialist and the Marxist who used that technique. And he said, we didn't know what we were doing. We, and this was during World War I, and the Germans didn't engage in propaganda. All the lies were against the Germans, and so it's been taken out of context. But the tactic is certainly the same. Just repeat, repeat, repeat. And right. even if it's just been refuted, then you're not going to hear about it. And the other thing that's kind of interesting is that the people who are really doing the work, yourself and C.W. Wade and Shel Murray and the Sandy Hook Lighthouse, which is, he's done all kinds of work on showing who or showing the internet presence of the shooter. And I mean, he was a presence, and he was very interested in Columbine. He was on several forums. He was very interested in mass murders. I mean, he was a real piece of work. I mean, this and Sandy Hook Lighthouse, Reed Coleman, has done some amazing work in this regard. But these people are never, never invited to do a radio program. I could count on one hand the number of times that I've been asked to talk about Sandy Hook on a radio program.
Well, you know, as I told you when I sent you that letter, I had prepared that for a radio program, and I was doing it to refute the fact that they had him on there.
Ah.
And, okay, and so that's the reason I did it. And what it was, I don't want to name the program because I don't want to badmouth them.
Sure.
They may come
sure.
around. But it was a program I thought really highly of, and I was surprised, very surprised, to find him on there because they usually don't have guests like that or deal with that sort of topic. And when I, you know, they said, well, if you can provide any evidence that he's not telling the truth about something, just, you know, just let us know.
Exactly.
So, you know, so that I sent them that document, and I mean, it's just been crickets ever since. And they said, oh, well, they, well, the crickets, except for they said that they had talked to Mr. Halbig, and he had assured them he was telling the truth. Well, is that really all it takes? I mean, I don't understand people who, these people do really good research. They have a guy that does awesome research that, you know, that I'm, you know, I just can't believe the things that he's able to find out and the research that he does. And yet, you know, when they read things like, for example, just what it takes to be a homicide investigator as a trooper or him saying, you know, he told you in an interview that he had trained 3,500 people. He's also said that he's trained 6,500 in another interview. And he said that he's provided all this training for 8,000 schools. 8,000 schools, not schools, school districts.
Districts. There are 8,000 in the country.
There are 13,515 in the country. So that's over half of them. And you're telling me that some guy riding a lazy boy in his den, with a UPS mailbox has trained over 3,500 or 6,500 people depending on what he says at any given time. And then when you look at what FEMA, DHS, and so on require, I did, since I wrote you that, I've actually done a little bit more work on that, on what they require for someone to be a basic instructor in any FEMA, OSHA, CDP discipline. There are three or four courses well beyond an introductory course, you know, which he shows as his credentials.
Right.
And then, there's a resident training program that you have to undergo. And then you also have to undergo, specific training in the discipline that you're going to be teaching that they didn't enumerate all of that on the website that I was looking at. And then you also have to have this NFPA 1041 level one, which is about 10 deep in courses that you have to take. So it, you don't just take a 3-hour online course and become a FEMA instructor.
Exactly. Anybody could take that course.
Exactly.
Anybody. And he said that that was his credentials for being able to be an instructor for all, for these 8,000 school districts. And
exactly.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. He has lied about so many things. I mean, you know, when I had him on, I said, okay, where's your office for his new, he had a new Children's Safety Institute. And he had a nice new website, and I said, oh, who designed your website? And he said, oh, we had it done. And I said, oh, where's your offices? And he told me. And it turned out, too, that he used people that were had already passed away for his references.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that his office, he gave her an address, and it turned out to be the UPS office. I mean, I caught him in so many lies on the program. And I do admit I got very frustrated when I interviewed him, and probably my frustration showed, and I got angry, which served his purposes beautifully.
Right. But I tell you what, I mean, I think that interview was really invaluable. I mean, you may not have felt like it went the way that you wanted it to go, but it was invaluable because it got him to say more things about himself, all of which were false.
Indeed, right. Yes, he did do. And he's made up so many other things since then. And it's interesting, too, that on December 14th, 2012, was the same day that his son was arrested for domestic violence. And so when he claims that these policemen came to his residence to talk to him about Sandy Hook and that apparently he was harassing people up in Newtown. But they may have come to the house to talk to his son, who had moved in with him after he was arrested. And when he was on a program, and he said, "Well, I've got to go. The police are back here." If he really wanted to prove his point that the police were harassing him, he should have put that telephone on speaker and let us listen. Right.
Right. Right. Exactly. And a seasoned investigator like himself. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but there are things he says that I don't know how else to react to them. They don't have anything to do with the way that, you know, that crimes are investigated. You know, there were a few things having to do with Sandy Hook that I thought were odd and might bear a little bit of attention, none of which were things that he mentioned. There are tapes and things of people running around in the woods with fatigues on. Now, I know that one was supposed to be a parent coming to pick a child up, that he had heard something was going on at the school and this, that, and the other. I'm not really well steeped in all that information, but.
And they did clear, that was Chris Manfredonia, and he was there to, they were making gingerbread houses that day, and he was there to do that. Then, they cuffed him, and then they cleared him. So all of the things that the unusual things that we did hear about, and keep in mind that they did come over the mainstream media, have been, they've been explained.
Right. I guess what I'm trying to say is that if he were to want to investigate things that look funny about Sandy Hook, to take the tactic of making them show that there was mold in the school, later on, I'll send you this just because it's so funny. Our local school here, we've had a bond election and all this sort of thing, and in the paper they put everything that's been wrong with the school for 5 or 6 years, as to why they want to have this done. There are wiring problems, problems with the roof, leaks, mold, et cetera, et cetera. But many of the things that he says about Sandy Hook Elementary, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to call the EPA and find out what the deal, why hasn't the school been shut down? I wasn't trying to get the school shut down. I just wanted to find out how they determine this. Well, someone has to make a complaint. They don't even look at it unless someone makes a complaint. A parent, a teacher, or someone to that effect has to make a complaint. They don't magically know that a school might have mold in it unless someone tells them, and they don't do routine investigation.
Exactly. Okay, Teresa, we're going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Deanna, and we're talking with Teresa, and you were talking about schools. And most of the schools are in pretty dreadful shape in this country. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay.
The same things that he says make it impossible for Sandy Hook to have been open. The school here has been open for 5 years with the very same kind of problems, and there is very little doubt in my mind, knowing the way things are run in a relatively small town, that if someone said, "Well, show me the paperwork for having done work on mold," you would probably be hard pressed to find someone who could come up with it. That's kind of preposterous on its face.
His own school, one of the schools that he used to work at, had mold problems, and he told the people that brought this to his attention that they shouldn't tell the parents, that the parents didn't want to be bothered with such information.
I know, I heard that. That's just, it's just one thing after another.
That is amazing.
I'm really kind of interested to know why the Attorney General of Florida hasn't done anything about this. I sent you the wire fraud statute.
Yes.
I don't understand why they haven't done something about this. Someone who is giving false credentials, false information, to people for the purpose of obtaining money from them, that is against the law.
Exactly. And I think something should be done. I agree with you totally.
So, I don't know why they haven't done anything about it. I don't know how, if they are aware of him, if it's just that they're not aware of him and they need to be made aware. But, you don't get to just, and the thing is, if they were to investigate this, it would not be Mr. Halbig, sitting there whining and carrying on about, I've done this and I've done this and I've done this. He would have to put up or shut up.
Right. So, exactly.
I think that that's something that needs to be addressed.
Yes, I agree with you. And certainly he has certainly had his way. And, I have the same feeling towards him as you do and many other people. I mean, if you just listen to the guy, it's pretty obvious that he's a compulsive liar. And as you described him, he is a narcissist. Just the way that he attacks people who disagree with him is pretty outrageous. So,
but this notion overall of people who follow him that, that if you're not with him, that you must be part of a plot.
Yes.
That's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I'm certainly grateful that you contacted me, and I would like to post your document if you want to add something to it before I post it. But I think that that it would be good for people to be able to see all of the links that you have in the document, and there are a lot of them, a lot of links here. So I think it would be very, very educational for people.
Sure.
Anyway, thank you so very, very much for joining me today. Our time is up, so take care, and we'll talk soon. Thank you. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk to you next week.